From the campus of Jacksonville State University in Jacksonville, Alabama, this is 91.9 FM WLJS Jacksonville.
Set sail, join an old sea dog, sit here in the corner, and gather round, boys, and hear my tale. We were homeward bound from the far East Indies, and filling up the hold in old Shanghai, when a horse and a carriage, they came near us. An old man and a young woman drew alongside. There are stories told of the wind and the rock, of haunted ships that never make dock, a thousand tales of the deep and the stormy brine, but this one's mine. She was the sweetest sight, the fairest beauty. I wiped my brow, I leapt ashore. He called me close and softly whispered, young man, for this one night she's yours. My shipmates stretched their eyes in wonder as I climbed in the carriage and I rode away, past that night in sweetest rapture. I didn't return till a break of day. There are stories told of the wind and the rock, of haunted ships that never make dock, a thousand tales of the deep and the stormy brine, but this one's mine. Oh, this one's mine. This one. Dawn was breaking, sadness in the old man's gray eyes. Took my arm, he said, now leave us, but go tell the whole world about old Shanghai. On every ship, some loudmouth sailor says it happened to him, what happened to you. But for one young man in all these oceans, well, I would have made this fiction true, forever known as a liar by all your crew. Stories told about the wind and the rock, of haunted ships that never make dock, a thousand tales of the deep and the stormy brine, and this was mine. Ah, this one's mine. This one's mine. Hey, 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 hey. In the corner, join me.
Good evening, people from Jacksonville State University and beyond over the waves of the computer. This is Abby Parks. You are listening to the Folk Renaissance Radio Show. I'm so glad to have you here this evening. I'm very excited this evening because I am playing a pre-recorded interview with Kate Campbell, singer-songwriter from Nashville, Tennessee. She's lived a couple other places in the South, including Alabama. Her husband's from Birmingham. And she has written some songs that include Alabama in them, in the title and in the story, as well as numerous songs she recorded with a, she wrote songs with a company in Muscle Shoals. And she's done all kind of things. She's put out numerous albums, is still touring, and she also conducts songwriting workshops. And I had the great fortune of getting to go to a songwriting workshop of hers last weekend. It was in a place called the Alabama Folk School, and it was at Camp McDowell, and it was a little bit north of Jasper when you get off the exit at Jasper. And it was a beautiful place. We pre-recorded the interview at Stowe Lodge there, and the weekend was full of talks from her. We got to have one-on-one sessions with her, meeting with her on bringing songs and getting critiques and help with anything we needed, and sharing songs. We had some jams, and she put on a concert the last evening. There was great food. Overall, it was a wonderful experience. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Alabama Folk School in a little bit. But what I'm going to do this evening is start out with playing her interview. I'm going to start it out, and I'm going to do it in segments and then play some songs of hers in between. She's got a wonderful album that kind of... she had put out some albums with traditional record companies, and then when they kind of got older, they wouldn't let her re-release, and she couldn't get her hands on the copies. And so she went and did a live album and re-released some of these songs that were her older hits. And so I have that album. It's called Kate Campbell, Two Nights in Texas. And it's a really great-sounding album. So we'll be playing some of these songs from that album, though the songs themselves, like I said, are from all periods of her career. So I'm going to go ahead and start this, and I hope y'all enjoy the evening. And we'll be taking a break for some other songs in between, and we will round it out. So here we're going to start out the interview. Hope you enjoy. Folk singer and songwriter. She's from Hi, I'm here with Kate Campbell, folk singer and songwriter. She's from Nashville, and she's been living in the South for her life. And, I'm interviewing her here at Stowe Lodge, outside of Jasper at Camp McDowell. We've just had a workshop weekend and had a wonderful time and learned a lot about songwriting. And now I have a few questions for you, Kate. Good to have you here.
Well, it's good to meet you, Abby. I think we met a while ago, but it's good to be here. It has been a really great weekend.
Sure has. First, I'd like to ask you, what is your definition of folk music, and how did folk music influence you musically growing up?
Well, you know, folk music to me, my basic definition is it's music from the folk. So that can have different, it can have all different kinds of, it can encompass actually most music. But in broader terms, it's music perhaps that hasn't been composed specifically according to necessarily music for orchestra or whatever. All symphonies have been written based on folk melodies, again, those things that I consider to be handed down, not necessarily always written down. And again, that can be expressed in many different ways. That's kind of where I'm at. So that's why we have so many different kinds of folk music out there floating around.
Right.
What's the second part of that?
How did folk music influence you musically?
Well, I was kind of one of those kids that actually I was a little kid in the 1960s, and my parents had given me a ukulele when I was like four. But also, my dad was a Baptist preacher, and so from the time I was little, I always kind of hung out with the teenagers because we were all there in the Little Baptist Church. And the 1960s, of course, there was everybody. I thought everybody actually played guitar. Not only on the radio, but everybody. Plus, I'm from the South and of course, lived in Nashville. And so there was everything. I listened to everything. But at that time, that's really also before radio also used to would play, like, Kissin' Angel Good Morning was a Charlie Pride song. He's from Mississippi, but that crossed over to pop music. Because back then, AM radio played... song was a song. A good song was a good song, and we weren't so divided. But but yes, I was very much influenced, I think, as a young child because that was what I call the heyday of the kind of 60s folk movement.
Yeah.
In my family, I was familiar with some traditional folk music, obviously, and I'm from Nashville, and so country music. So it was all in there. But I don't know if that made sense, but that's really, I think, again, I think the biggest thing was I thought everybody played guitar, so I played guitar. And sang those songs
that's
at youth
a great
camp.
Way to start.
Everybody sang all those songs. Even when I was a little girl, we would go to youth camps and everybody would be singing 500 Miles and all the stuff from Peter, Paul, and Mary and Bob Dylan and all that kind of stuff.
Kumbaya.
Michael Rowe, The Boat at Shore. All that stuff, yes.
That's right. Well,
That was a little segment of the interview, and now I'm going to play a song called Free World. It was a very cool song. She talked about it during her workshop and about how she had read a line out of a writing by William Faulkner, and it talked about farming and living in the free world. And you'll hear the line in the song, but she kept that line stewing in her head for a very long time, and then this is what came of it. This is Free World off of the album Two Nights in Texas.
So here's one of my songs I just like to play. I play it every concert. I'm going to keep playing it until I feel like I've spent enough time playing it to make up for all the years it took me to write it. So... I'm going out into the free world and farm. I'm gonna paint me a big red barn. Don't wanna do nobody else no harm. I'm going out. Thank you.
are your favorite folk artists, and why, or who are they?
Well, you know, I have to say, I was familiar with most of them. No, I have to say I've been pretty eclectic my whole life. So I knew tunes, and I was, from an early childhood, actually, I was probably most influenced as far as singing and listening to, I always knew who wrote songs. But when I was a really little girl, Dolly Parton is still probably one of my biggest influences, only because she was the first woman I knew who wrote songs and usually sang a good deal of what she wrote. And I first saw her on TV when I was a little girl playing the guitar and stuff.
Yeah.
So Dolly Parton, Kris Kristofferson has always been a probably a huge influence, because my favorite song was Me and Bobby McGee. And I had the 45 of Janis Joplin singing that.
Wow.
And but I, once again, I knew that Kris Kristofferson wrote that. So I was, I don't know why, I don't know if it's because I read music because I was taking piano, and I would always look at songs and, you know, I'd see who wrote them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I liked James Taylor by the time I got, early. Again, more of the singer-songwriter. And I had Peter, Paul, and Mary albums, but, you know, then, of course, I love the Allman Brothers. I'm very, again, quite eclectic, but I think it's because of my background. And I sang a lot of those. And at that time, everything. A good song is a good song. So I knew Joni Mitchell. I've much more probably gotten into Joni Mitchell when I was older than I did when I was younger. It's kind of interesting thing about it. I love John Denver. He was huge. So I'm putting, a lot of these people actually started out as singer-songwriters, and some of them, of course, began to be heard on pop radio. So that's, I'm kind of placing myself in the
I'm in that area too.
Of the folk realm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, to me radio was everything, and whatever my parents listened to as well. So
yeah, Dan Fogelberg I liked in the 70s.
I think
he was a fantastic writer, and and when he was first played, one of the first actually FM stations he was played on was in Nashville, which is interesting.
Cool.
But you know, I guess we're using the word folk music, and that's not one of my favorite terms, because I think there's traditional folk songs.
Yeah.
And then there's songs that we, I think, have called folk because they didn't quite go with what was contemporary country music, not quite a pop song, and there was no other realm. But through the years, I've liked the term singer-songwriter. To me, for what I think we're talking about right now. Another great early influence of mine was Paul Simon, who's a great singer-songwriter. Again, I'm kind of...
He sure is.
Yeah. So that's... I mean, but I was very eclectic. Again, I was a little kid. All of it was played on the radio next to each other. You'd hear the Beatles. You'd hear the Allman Brothers.
That's
you'd
true.
You'd hear a country song if it was a great country song.
Yeah.
You'd hear Peter, Paul, and Mary singing great songs. The Byrds. Bob Dylan, all of these, but you would hear them all the time. There wasn't this, you have to go searching.
Yeah, and do you feel like it's more like that now, that you, it, music is almost more segregated as far as the radio goes?
I think, I still think that. I do think it's become more that way. I mean, there's so many good things. There's a lot of great things about FM radio and the ability to do things, but yeah, I do. And I think the reasons to do that have everything to do with business and nothing to do with...
Right.
It's just the way they have to be, but...
That's true.
I think it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. Awesome.
And, interestingly, in conjunction with the other people she named that she was very much a fan of, when we were at the workshops during one of her lectures... she did talk about one singer that she was crazy about, and that was Elvis Presley. And she did live down in Mississippi for a while. But she's had many, many jobs was one thing she talked about. And at one point in her career, she was a librarian. and she was skimming through some titles in the science fiction area, and she saw this book title, and she was looking at it from an angle, and she thought it said Tupelo was too far, but she found out later that it was some other kind of strange world of a fictitious place, not Tupelo, Mississippi. But when she read that, she thought that was really interesting, and she stewed on that title, and she did end up writing a song, and she talked about how the point of view of the song, at first she wrote it as a person talking about Elvis, because she felt as a woman, she felt a little funny about writing the song as if she was Elvis. But the song wasn't quite working, and she realized that the point of view needed to change, and that she needed to write it as if it's Elvis saying, you know, I miss this place, Tupelo is too far. And it's a wonderful song, and I'm going to play it for you next. This is Tupelo is Too Far.
And so this is a little tune. It was really kind of a breakthrough for me in my songwriting. Even though I've been writing since I was a little girl, this song to me, I kind of felt like, okay, maybe this is, now I'm kind of getting somewhere with this, and it came out the way I wanted it. So here we go. Saltilla Street and the house where I was born. I can hear gospel songs from the church on Sunday morn. Saturday nights round the radio, life was simple then. But this road I'm on won't take me there. You can't go back again. I wish I could take Route 78 and be there in no time. Rest beneath the sweet gum trees. Leave all my cares behind, but Tupelo's too far. I never dreamed I would be a king, much less a star. Never knew that what I loved could also break my heart. I always thought if I just sang, everything would be all right. And I don't know what went wrong, but I'm lonesome tonight. I wish I could take Route 78 and be there in no time. Rest beneath the sweet gum trees, leave all my cares behind. But Tupelo's too far. Too far.
Well, I have another question for you, kind of in the folk area, but yeah. What is it about your music that causes you to label yourself a folk artist, or I guess maybe you label yourself more a singer-songwriter as opposed to country?
Right. Well, I never labeled myself that, actually. You know, I wrote for Fame Music in Nashville, and I would probably tell people that if you looked at the structure of my songs and my actual background, my songs are structured like Nashville songwriter. That's mm-hmm. really what I know. However, when I began to write and people began to want to hear me singing what I wrote, at that point, which was now back in the mid-90s, when the first record came out, you know, people were calling it folk music and they were associating it more with like New England. And nowhere in the South there were very few radio stations that would play that, because we basically mm-hmm. played country and classic rock. And although my songs are melodically and structurally written like actually Nashville songs, my subject matter wasn't what was being played mm-hmm. often. Every now and then some of my tunes were early on, you know. And so what happened is with radio, the format began to be on public radio and university radio stations, which were more powerful in the Northeast. In the Northeast, they would actually call it folk. Mm-hmm. And then, really early on, about my second record, they came up with the Americana chart. And so early on, I was on the Americana chart. Now, that, to me, has shifted, too, since... now I'm not quite, I think that's a little bit more, I shouldn't say this on air, but here we go. I think it's Americana has become more Texas-oriented singer-songwriter, kind of a little, again, not quite country, but mm-hmm. a little bit, I'm not quite rustic, but on the other hand, I'm not quite New England folk either. So I'm everybody's, mm-hmm. I'm really... in between.
Yeah.
And so that's why I thought the best term for what I do is singer-songwriter, because I right. mostly sing what I write.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do cover songs. I don't do those things. So to me, for me, that's what happened. Though yeah. I'm usually, if anybody looks me up, they're going to see me found on folk radio. They're going to see me in iTunes under, they'll always list me as folk.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a much larger... And the Folk Alliance, because of the Folk Alliance and these things, that's where I'm always categorized.
Yeah.
If cool. that makes sense. It sure does. That's how it all happened.
It does.
Sudden revelation, I'm finally living in the new South. They make Mercedes down in Vance, Alabama, and Tennessee is cranking Nissans out. I read about it in my Wall Street Journal. We're all living in the new South. They'll valet park you at the Galleria. Check your MasterCard or Visa. They love our money at those Yankee stores. It's getting hard to find good grits and gravy. I know you know what I'm talking about. But that's the price you have to pay for progress and to be living in the new South. Took a while, but I think we made it. We can finally put the PSAs are our new hounds. Thanks to Disney World and Coca-Cola, we're finally living in the new South. Y'all come see us in the new
And you are listening to the Folk Renaissance Radio Show. I'm your host, Abby Parks. I've been playing some excerpts from an interview I made with Kate Campbell, singer and songwriter from Nashville. And I'm going to be coming back to the interview in about 10 minutes. I'm going to play a few songs in between. But that last song was called The New South off of that same album, Two Nights in Texas. I'm really enjoying the album. There's some good storytelling on there as well. So I definitely recommend that album. If you want to check her out now, you're going to look at www.katecampbell.com, and she'll talk a little bit at the end of the interview about where you can find information about her. Up next, I'm going to play Bob Bradshaw singing Remember Me, and then a funny little song from Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson off of their album Berry Mania, and then Bayoga.
This is what I know, the blood was mine, stained like wine at first, till it burst out through the buttonholes. Let the record show, the blood blossomed like a rose, and then it froze, and I began to lose control. A movie played behind my eyes, loosely based upon my life. Thousand parts yet to play. It all ended with a knife. Is what I had to do. Sent out a scout, and all alone at dawn I was to spy on an enemy parade. Every word is true. To my surprise, my demands came in a weeping willow dell. There I fell, there I lay. Leaves quickly covered up the spot. A rose grew right through my heart. And then a wildflower, no telling us apart. Willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree. This is what they found, reading glasses, weekend pass, chocolate bar, harmonica. A ribbon mouth that gave me caked in mud. Now there's nothing on the ground but a single rose that grows beside a willow tree that covers me, that covers up the blood. The world keeps turning, seasons come and go, winter, spring, summer, fall, the blood red petals show. Willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree, remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree. Willow tree, remember me. Remember me, weep for me, willow tree. Remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree. Remember me, remember me. Weep for me, willow tree.
the pirates in their fetid galleons, daggers in their skivvies, with infected tattooed fingers on a blunderbuss or two, signs of scurvy in their eyes and only mermaids on their minds. It's from them I would expect to hear the F word, not from you.
There are lumberjacks from Kodiak vacationing in Anchorage, enchanted with their pine tar soup and caribou shampoo, with 7 weeks of back pay in their aromatic woolens. It's from them I would expect to hear the F word, not from you. We sit down to have a chat. It's F-word this and F-word that. I can't control how you young people talk with one another, but I don't want to hear you use that F-word with your mother.
There are militant survivalists with Gucci bandoleros, taking tacky, khaki, walkie-talkies to the rendezvous, trading all the latest armor-piercing ammo information. It's from them I would expect to hear the F-word, not from you.
There are jocks who think that God himself is drooling in the bleachers in a cold November downpour with a belly full of brew, whose entire grasp of heaven has a lot to do with football.
It's from them I would expect to hear the F-word, not from you. We sit down to have a chat. It's F-word this and F-word that. I can't control how you young people talk with one another, but I don't want to hear you use that F-word with your mother.
There's unsavory musicians with their filthy pinko lyrics, who destroy the social fabric and enjoy it when they do,
with their groupies and addictions and their poor heartbroken parents.
It's from them I would expect to hear the F word, not from you. We sit down to have a chat. It's F-word this and F-word that. I can't control how you young people talk with one another, but I don't want to hear you use that F-word with your mother.
Thank you.
listening to 91.9 FM WLJS in Jacksonville, Alabama. I'm the host of the Folk Renaissance Radio Show, Abby Parks, and we've been playing some interview that I had with Kate Campbell, singer and songwriter from Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm going to play you a bit of the next segment of the show and then talk about the song coming up. But before that, we just had Bayoga with Kicking the Box from their Live at 10, the 10th anniversary concert. A Chat with Your Mom from Stephen Gillette and Cindy Mangson. I love that song. Before that, Bob Bradshaw with Remember Me. So here's the continuation of our interview.
Okay, my next question is, what was your motivation for making a gospel album?
Well, I actually never planned on it, even though when I was younger I thought the songs I was writing, I was actually trying to get a publishing deal in the Christian music industry because I thought I was writing Christian music. Apparently I wasn't, or something. But along the way, of course, I just started writing my tunes in the folk market, and a record company picked it up, and I got the publishing deal with Fang. And so, I don't know, I'd done about 4 studio albums, and I thought I had met all these wonderful musicians, and I had access to Fame Studio, and I thought, wow, I think I'll do some of those old tunes. When I was little, I used to think, these are great songs. It's just that we sing them so much in church, sometimes I think we don't pay attention to the words or the melodies. And and when I was younger, I used to think it'd be great if the Allman Brothers, like, did one of these tunes, because it'd be awesome, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought, since I had access to Spooner Oldham and some of these folks, I would do that. So I started calling up my Alabama friends, and I said, I'm thinking about doing some a gospel record of a sort. And at first I was only going to do tunes from the hymnal, and and Spooner in particular, when I called and asked if he would play on it, he said, well, okay, I think maybe you should do some of your own songs. So then I thought, well, my friends that are playing, I'll write a tune by myself, and we'll pick from the list of the hymns that I wanted to do, and I'll write a song, one with Spooner and one with Martin Armore, who is a longtime writer, and one with Walt Aldridge, who's playing guitar, and that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being my largest selling CD. It's called Wandering Strange.
Well, that's awesome.
And it helped. Well, a lot of weird things, you never know, but National Public Radio, about the time that record came out, did a series called Emerging Southern Artists, and they picked me as one of those.
Cool.
And that was right when Wandering Strange came out. And anyway, it was kind of cool. So, like I said, it was just the way it all happened, and people have responded so well. So I did a second more gospel-oriented album, also at Fame, and it's just me and Spooner, and I think it's a classic tune, too. So there's, some originals or songs that I think belong in the gospel, under the gospel category, and then obviously some old hymns that I play.
So. Now, what are the names of those two gospel albums?
First one is called Wandering Strange. Okay. The second one is called For the Living of These Days.
Awesome. Okay.
Wasn't no copperhead, wasn't no cottonmouth, just a garden snake that brought us all down. Didn't look deadly, didn't look venomous. Wrapped around that tree so lovely and sensuous. Well, there's vices and voodoo always enticing you. From the day that you're born till the day you leave this world. Devil's got a line for you for sure, and 10,000 lures.
It's what we call a hook in songwriting.
You may think I'm preaching, even evangelizing, but what he's throwing out can be so tantalizing. He's a master of disguise. He'll reel you in with power, roaming to and fro, seeking whom he may devour. There's vices and voodoo, always enticing you. From the day that you're born to the day you leave this world, the devil's got a line for you for sure, and 10,000 lures. Well, he knows every weakness, knows just when to strike. You know he was an angel once, and he knows what you like. For you it might be money, for me it might be fame. Better cover up your ears now when he whispers your name. 'Cause there's vices and voodoo, always enticing you. From the day that you're born till the day you leave this world, the devil's got a line for you for sure, and 10,000 before I end the song, before the music's through. Oh, I'd like to share a good word or two. There's 10,000 angels watching over you from the day that you're born to the day you live. Rusty nails that secure for 10,000
So my mama says to me, you know, Kate, I think that song could go in the Baptist hymnal. And I said, I don't really believe the word voodoo's ever been in the Baptist hymnal.
And that's funny, isn't it? Yeah, that song was called 10,000 Lures, and it was originally on one of those two gospel albums she was talking about. I'm sorry, I don't know which one it was. But I do know that the song is on this album I've been playing excerpts from tonight, Two Nights in Texas by Kate Campbell. We'll continue with the interview now.
How often do you do workshops on songwriting, and what is the underlying theme or message that you see as the most important that you wish to impart to other songwriters?
Well, you know, through the years, it's gotten to be where I probably do anywhere from 5 to 8 to 10, some sort of workshop. Some are week-long, some are camps, some are weekends like we just had here in Alabama. Sometimes it's a 4-hour afternoon workshop before a concert with people. You know, so it's been really cool. So definitely throughout, sometimes it's for a university program. It's been cool. And I love to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think people know that I like to teach and like to participate in those. I think through the years I felt like the most important thing, because it was important for me, was, even though I've written since I was a little girl, and I learned so much from great songwriters and people who write for a living for country music and my time in a publishing company, but the most important thing is to write, I think, what you want to write about.
Mm-hmm.
Start there. Express yourself. I mean, I think it gives us a way to express ourselves if we're musical people. And stay true to that. And then help people, hopefully, you know, write what they feel drawn to write. Write about what they want to share or whatever. Because for me, songwriting has been a way for me to kind of dialogue with where I come from, the mm-hmm. South, and with my people, as I like to say, and the changes in the South. And so I encourage everybody to find that voice, find your voice, and do that. And then at the workshops, so then I like to say, okay, don't be scared to write what you need to be writing about. And then hopefully I can give you some tips on, you know, maybe finishing a tune or editing it so that when you start to sing that, it's more of a complete song. But I like to really encourage people, don't freak out about if it's the right way or wrong way at the mm-hmm. start. You write.
Right.
And then we can learn how to fix it ourselves.
Yeah.
We can learn that, and hopefully I help people in that. But I really like it to be good. You know, I want it to be a conversation that people have. And most of all of the camps and things I participated in have been fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I found that inspiring because a lot of times I've been in songwriting groups and things where it's you're just being, you know, given a bunch of rules or, you know, and all that stuff is good, but in the end, sometimes your creativity feels a little stifled.
Right.
I think
they should be tools. I like to use the word, you know, Martha Stewart used the word tools. Not rules. I think sometimes we think of songwriting as rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first time I taught one, I said, we're going to talk about some Martha Stewart tools for songwriting.
Yeah.
It's a much better word to help us out. So.
Yeah. Cool.
And that was another segment from the interview. And I wanted to play a song for you that she talked about in her workshop. It was a pretty funny story. She was riding along a country road one day, and she saw a tomato stand on the side of the road and a big sign that said, Jesus and Tomatoes Coming Soon. And as soon as she saw that sign in her mind, she was like, that's a song. But it took her a long time to kind of come up with the story to go with it. But she told how she was inspired when she was in Nashville, and there was, and I can't remember for sure if it was a coffee or a pastry shop, but there was definitely a point where this shop, it was in the newspaper, because they had made a pastry of some kind, and then they swore up and down that the pastry looked like the face of Mother Teresa, and so they preserved the pastry, put it in a box, and put it by the cash register, and people started coming to look at this pastry, and then they made T-shirts with picture of the Mother Teresa in the pastry and started, you know, marketing it on the web. So when she read this article and saw the story, this was what was the catalyst for her to write the the story for this song. So I'm going to play for you now, Jesus and Tomatoes.
So I was driving over there in Western Carolina. Y'all know mountains. So I'm up there, and it's a beautiful sunny day, and it's the summertime, and there's this fruit and vegetable stand by the side of the road. And bigger than the fruit and vegetable stand was a sign out front saying, Jesus and Tomatoes Coming Soon. I knew immediately that was going to have to be a song, you know.
A pack of seeds, Tennessee Bradley's the best homegrown you'll find. How it happened, I don't know. Must have been the miracle grow. Oh, I could not believe my eyes. made a bed, a holy image, blood red. Smile, God loves you. I see him on the vine. This just might be a sign. Help me, I'm confused. So many brands to choose. Jesus, Santa made us coming soon. Folks came from miles around. They laid their money down to see that ripe phenomenon. Even made the evening news and had a website to this vegetable from heaven.
Or is it a fruit?
What arose up from the dirt now sells on t-shirts. Smile, God loves you. I see him on the vine. This just might be a sign. Help me, I'm confused. So many brands to choose. Jesus, Santa made us coming soon. Prophets kept rolling in. I prayed they'd never end and filed for tax exemption. Heard a knocking at my door. Was a lawyer for the Lord saying, don't do this no more. Said, come and dine with me and we'll have a BLT. This might be a sign. Help me, I'm confused. So many brands to choose. Jesus and made us a coming soon.
Was Jesus and Tomatoes Coming Soon from our guest speaker this evening, Kate Campbell, from the campus of Jacksonville State University in Jacksonville, Alabama. You're listening to 91.9 FM WLJS. Thank you for tuning in. Yes, if you've just tuned in, that was Kate Campbell singing. And now we're going to go on and hear some more of her interview that I taped with her at the Stowe Lodge at Camp McDowell near Jasper, Alabama.
Okay. You sang a really great song for us in our workshop last night, and it was called Crazy in Alabama, and it had a really powerful message regarding the civil rights movement. And that song in particular, I was wondering what your inspiration for writing it was.
Well, it was very interesting. I wrote that with another friend from Alabama, right? It's been a while now, actually, since we wrote the song. It's when I was writing for Fame, and she was writing for another company, and she'd heard me in concert, because I was already kind of singing out and stuff, and because I sing about the South, and even on my first record, I started writing about civil rights and my experience being a Southerner. And we just started talking, and, you know, one thing led to another. And it's interesting. And it just kind of all spilled. And I try to tell people, we formed it into a song which has a storyline. However, the song is full of many different images from both of us as we were talking, different moments. And the song is told from a child's view, because I was a little girl in the 1960s and didn't really understand everything that was going on around me. And obviously, even when you saw things on TV, my family had like a little black and white TV, you think that's in the TV. You don't know when you're little that that's possibly in the next street over.
Yeah.
And so it's been very interesting. And we finished, you know, we wrote you know, we had the tune, and I debated on whether or not I was going to put it on the album that it originally came out on, and but I started singing it, and the response has been so unbelievable through the years. Wow. When I sing it in the North, or outside the South, rather, people will say, I think they've never heard a white person from the South actually sing very much about what I sing about, number one.
Right.
And number two, it's kind of like, do you sing that song down there?
Yeah.
And I go, yes, I do. And then in the South, through the years, not, but particularly I think this song, but also a lot of my music, they'll say, thank you so much for singing my life and talking about things that I can't talk about.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I think that some, I don't think that we know, I had no idea. Somehow, God is bigger than me and you, and I think the universe, and somehow, hopefully, even any kind of artistic thing you do, I just kind of see it as, for whatever reason, I'm supposed to be writing this today, and I just have to write it and let it go, because I can't control that.
Mm-mm.
But what a blessing it's been to me, and again, I had no idea. But that's how the song, we just started talking. She's from, like I said, she's from Calera, Alabama, and we started talking, and there we were about 4 hours later. We just talked about our experiences as little girls and all the stuff going on, and then all of a sudden we had the storyline going. And
And
I think that it, because it's written from a child's view, and it's not a preachy song, it's not about all this stuff, it's just what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's experienced through a child's view that I think all kinds of people, and I hope all kinds of people will give a chance, listen to it sometime, and they can relate to it and hear it however they need to hear it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing about songwriting. I think you have to, at some point, you have to learn to let things go. Let the song come from you, move through it, experience it, and also understand that not everybody is going to have, you're the songwriter. So there's certain reasons why that you wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, every person in that audience is going to experience a song differently because
right.
of what they're bringing to the table. And to just let that be what it needs to be. Release that into the air and it'd be cool. And so I know that it's been a blessing for me and such. I had no idea, of course. You know, lots of things we wouldn't do if we had any idea when we started. But it's been a remarkable journey now.
Well, that's cool. That song was very inspiring to me. And it does take, I think it takes a little bit of guts to deal with certain subject matter, you know, and I was inspired by that.
Good. I think sometimes, like I said, it's best that you don't know what you're doing when you do it.
Yeah.
Best, you know, oh, I wrote this new song, you know. That's what happened.
That's right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Kate, and where can people find out more about you, your website, and where can people buy music online or order it?
Well, it's my website, www.katecampbell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
Kate with a K.
K-A-T-E. C-A-M-P-B, like Campbell's soup.
Yeah.
There is a PB in there. PBELL.com.
Okay.
Actually, I've been very blessed. My music's everywhere. It's obviously at my website. And if you want things autographed, and actually, truthfully, if you can wait a couple of days to get your order, that helps me the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to help the singer-songwriter the most. However, all of my music is distributed worldwide. Everything is on iTunes. Everything is on
Great.
Amazon. So if you want single tunes, go to iTunes, go to Amazon, whichever one you use. Some music stores that are still left, Barnes & Noble, those things, they because they work with Amazon, you'll find the hard copies there as well. So it's all out there, and there's a couple things, and there's all kinds of stuff on YouTube. Of course, I don't look at that. I don't even want to know what people put up there, but you can find me on YouTube, too.
Yeah. I know how that is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Abby.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she may not want you to go looking for her on YouTube, but I'll tell you, at her website, she has a wonderful display of videos She, in fact, I think a whole concert, they cut it up into a bunch of videos, and because she's wearing the same thing in all of them. But you can go to that when you go to her gallery at her website that she just talked about. The last song I'm going to play by Kate Campbell this evening is Crazy in Alabama. And adding to what she already said, she told a wonderful story about a man from the South who did approach her after the end of a concert and remarked on that song. And he told her that he was in the ROTC and he was living in the South and in the 60s. And there was going to be a demonstration and a speaker coming to speak about civil rights. And so the ROTC, they were called in to put on their uniforms and go and stand and help protect the speaker. And when he went down there and with his fellow officers, he stood there and people in the streets spat on him, cursed at him. And he said, as a young teenager, that was very overwhelming, and he had never experienced anything like that. And when he heard this song that I'm about to play for you, that Kate Campbell sang that evening, it just touched him and moved him to tears. And I just thought that was a beautiful story. And it's also beautiful that songs can reach deep into people's hearts and touch them. And Kate Campbell really has a knack for that. I think she's a wonderful speaker, too. And, boy, what a pleasure to interview her. As you could tell, all I had to do was give the question, and she really just ran with it. She's a good speaker. I hope that everyone I ever interview in the future is as easy to deal with as her. But now we're going to play Crazy in Alabama.
Odessa's mind was sick, that she was crazier than hell. The police caught her turning tricks down at the Blue and Gray Motel. Odessa was the neighbor's maid. She had 10 mouths at home to feed. They bust her kids to Birmingham and put her in the county jail. Nobody seemed to give a damn. They say a white man posted bail. My dad said not to breathe a word. I told my brother all I heard. And the train of change was coming fast to my hometown. We had the choice to climb on board or get run down. It was crazy, there were grown men fights over segregation and civil rights. Martin Luther King, the KKK, George C. Wallace, and LBJ. When the National Guard came in, I thought the world was gonna end. It was crazy in Alabama. Down at the corner dairy dip, they sold soft ice cream for a dime. White people ordered from the front, the saddle was for the colored line. And we all were told they had their place because they were a different race. We spent hot summer afternoons at the public swimming pool, where the privileged and the few played on their island of cool blue. And brown children watched outside the fence. It never made one lick of sense. But
train of change was coming fast to my hometown. We had the choice to climb on board or get run down. It was crazy, there were grown men fights over segregation and civil rights. Martin Luther King, the KKK, George C. Wallace, and LBJ. When the National Guard came in, I thought the world was gonna end. It was crazy in Alabama. My mama yelled, child, get inside. Drew the drapes, locked the doors. We watched the marchers passing by. Felt the rumble, heard the roar. And they all held hands. They sang and wept, and freedom rang in every step. 'Cause a train of change was marching through my hometown. We had the choice to climb on board or get run down. It was crazy, there were grown men fights over segregation and civil rights. Martin Luther King, the KKK, George C. Wallace, and LBJ. When the National Guard came in, I thought the world was gone. It was crazy in Alabama. Well, I heard Odessa's mind was sick, that she was crazier than hell.
And that was Kate Campbell singing Crazy in Alabama off of her album called Two Nights in Texas. It was a live album, and what a lovely, lovely song, and what a great interview. Kate, if you're listening out there, I doubt you are, but thank you so much for that. Up next, I'm playing a song off of a new album by Frank Robert, and I thought this song was pretty funny because we're quickly approaching tax time. It'll be the mid of this month. My goal had been to do my taxes during spring break when I had some extra time, and I came home from that camp retreat with an illness, and I spent a lot of time just laying around trying to recover, and then I had some other things going on that had to take the front burner, and taxes got pushed to the back burner, and basically I have zero done on my taxes. But this is a pretty funny blues song. It's called The Tax Time Blues off of his new album Ride the Iron Road. And after that, we'll be playing the Barbara McNeils with Clumsy Lover Set.
Uncle Sam keeps calling now. Lord, it must be taxing time. Uncle Sam keeps calling. Lord, it must be taxing time. Yeah, but what am I gonna do now? I don't even have a lousy dime. Gotta file a 1040 now. Where's my W-2 1099? Gotta file 1040. Where's my W-2 1099? If I don't hurry now, Uncle Sam will give me a fine. Rich man got it made now. Never pay no tax. Poor man ain't got nothing now, and his job just got axed now. Uncle Sam keeps calling. Must be old taxing time. What am I gonna do now? I don't even have a lousy dime. Seems every week now, lose more of my pay. Uncle Sam keeps calling, they want to take more of it away now. Uncle Sam keeps calling, Lord, it must be taxing time. Yeah, what am I gonna do now? I don't even have a lousy dime. Taxman takes so much, Lord, I ain't even got a dollar to spend. Taxman takes so much now, I ain't even got a dollar to spend. I tell you right now, people, Lord, Uncle Sam, Lord, I tell you, he ain't your friend.